I'm Val Aspardi.
I'm Heather Adams.
You are listening to Training Age, the podcast where we explore what fitness, health, and training looks like at different stages of your fitness journey. Heather, we're here for another episode, episode 18. How are you?
I can't believe we're 18 episodes in. And I'm laughing because we just spent how long? Almost an hour just chatting before we even started recording.
We're the best at that.
I know. Our pre-podcast and girl chat catch up. So
we should just have that on record every time. We could always find good snippets in there.
I'm sure. Really, I think we did actually have some good moments in there talking about the episode. So maybe next time.
Yes. Well, let's get into our fun little segment before we dive into our topic of the day, but let's something good ourselves. So Heather, what's your something good?
Oh, my something good. And for those of you that are like, what is this something good? This is actually a question that Val has on her check-in form that I've always really liked because it helps us to just remember all of the really good things that are happening in our life. And there's always something good. Always something good. But my something good's kind of a big something good. And Val knows about this, but I figure by the time this episode airs, it will be well known amongst most people. But my oldest son is getting married. So crazy. I am going to be a mother-in-law and I'm going to have a bonus daughter. And I'm just so excited and cannot believe I am in this phase of my life. So yeah, it'll be very fun. He's getting married in September. And I told him when he met this girl, I just knew. I knew that he was smitten. I knew what was going to happen. And I said, that is wonderful. I am so happy for you. But my summer is too busy for a wedding. So you need to not get married this summer. And he's never been one to obey me.
So wedding this summer.
So we are getting ready for a wedding this summer. But I'm thrilled for them. And there's something about young people in love that like is just a little contagious. I think everybody else just feels like love is in the air and it's super fun. So,
yeah, sweet. They are adorable. I've seen the pictures. So
yes. And a cute little thing about them that's funny is that my son is 6'4" and Piper, his fiance, is only 5'1". And so the height disparity is kind of cute and comical as well, but they're adorable. She's the same height as my 12-year-old daughter.
No way, really?
Yes, they are about the same height. So it's pretty cute.
So petite.
So petite.
I love her name too, Piper.
She's Piper, so fun. Yes.
Bonus daughter coming this summer.
I know, it's awesome. All right, Val, tell me something good.
Well, I colored my hair after like 5 years. That's my something good. And it's so fun. It's like fun and refreshing.
It looks so good. I've been fangirling over your hair like ever since you did it. So it's so cute.
That's it. It's very superficial, not as exciting and long-term as having a new daughter-in-law. So I am, but yeah, I'm excited about it. It's just a fun change. And I can curl my hair now.
Goes to show that our something goods can be big, it can be something small, but all can bring joy. And I just think your hair just looks so great. So fun.
Thanks. Okay, guys. So I challenge all of you listening to think of something good. And it doesn't have to be fitness or health related either. And sometimes I think that sometimes clients, they get into the trap of, okay, what is something good that I did with training this week or something when they respond to that question? But it really is just like just taking inventory of the week and counting your blessings, essentially.
Yeah.
So our episode today, we are going to talk about best glute building exercises. And yes, it's clickbaity sounding, but we hear it all the time, right? We hop on Instagram and it's like top five glute building exercises, or here's the latest and greatest setup. You wrap some bands around your thighs and you lean over a barbell in a squat rack, or you see like The horn thruster was something that made its debut.
Oh, it made the rounds.
And everybody, I think all of you guys have seen the horn thruster. Yeah. So it's just one of those, like, maybe it could be beneficial, but for the cost, the inconvenience, the weight of the thing, and just the way that it looks when you do it. Like, let's be honest here, you guys. Let's address the elephant in the room with that. You know, it's just one of those where it's like, is that really something you'd want to add into your toolbox that makes a whole lot of sense? Or can we look at things from a better lens of what's really going to help us if our goal is truly to build the booty? So today we hope to provide a little bit more insight into the mysterious realm of glute building.
And it's actually not as mysterious as it may seem online. I mean, that's the thing when you were talking about all these different things out there. And dang, does it get confusing if you don't really know what the goal is or how to set up properly. There's a million different ways you can do it, but I think what we're hoping to achieve here is to just give you some good base information so that you can choose the best, you can decide what the best glute exercises are for you, not have the internet decide for you.
Yes. And I do think that a trap that we sometimes people tend to fall into is they're like, oh, this girl, I saw her doing this exercise and she has a great set of glutes. Like, she has a really good physique. So clearly I want to do it too because she's doing it. Like, do you see that sometimes?
It's like, yes. You see these like phenomenal glutes and they're doing something that at least I know that's really not the most efficient way to build your glutes, right? Like, it feels complicated. The setup's a little wonky. I can think of like five other exercises that I would program before that, but she has amazing glutes. And I watch that and I think that's probably not how she got those glutes.
Yeah. It's like, is she really just doing that a few times a week? Is it really working? And I mean, cause some of the other exercises I see with these amazing females, I'm like, no shade, right? No shade on them. They're absolutely incredible. And I love, it's fun to watch them because they have these amazing glutes that like contract you. Like, anyway, now I sound creepy.
Nobody saw your hand motions.
I'm like, contract. but there was this one, there's a few actually where I see them using a cable machine and just doing a bunch of unilateral work. Just like bending in different ways. So they'll bend over, then they'll bend to the side, then they'll do kind of like a clamshell type of thing. And then they'll go and like hop on their patio with this amazing view in the background too. So not only do they look good, but they've got a really incredible view, you know, in Miami or wherever. They've got the beach in the background and stuff like that. And they're doing, you know, like kneeling, like fire hydrant-y type of things. And you just are like, oh, if only that really worked, that would be really fun. And those things, don't get me wrong, if you want to do them, more power to you. There is definitely an element of doing things because you enjoy them. You want to have that enjoyment factor. But if the goal is hypertrophy, you're not going to see that by doing a bunch of, you know, abduction, mini band type of things. You're going to see that by better improved exercise selection. And so what are some good characteristics of some solid glute exercises? Like, what would you define as some good characteristics there?
Well, I think first of all, you kind of need to understand how to work the glutes, right? Not all squats or lunges or setups are created equal. So I think one of the things people need to understand is when we're working the glutes, we need to work with some hip flexion or hip extension. And especially when we're working within hip flexion, then we also need to have a little bit of knee flexion too. So some, what I will often tell clients is when you're going into a squat, at the bottom of that squat, we're looking for kind of a 90 degree with the legs, and we're looking for the torso to be coming towards the front of the leg. So we're looking for some good hip flexion. So you, and you can kind of feel that stretch in the back of your glute when you do that, when you're working in that lengthened, when that glute is stretched. So I think people need to understand that component of it, some anatomy component of that, to be able to look for a good glute exercise. So we want to work those glutes in a lengthened position. So some exercises for that would be, well, I mean, like the goat of all exercises for glute hypertrophy to me is like a leg press. Yes. Because there's just a lot of great stability there. The setup is pretty easy and straightforward, and you can just really push a good heavy load with that and just get some good isolation in the glutes. You know, squats, you know, a hip dominant squat where you're getting some good hip flexion. That's a good exercise. Split squats are good if they're set up to get more glute. I see a lot of quad focus squats, and I don't think people quite understand. I feel like I've talked to a lot of clients this week about quad focused exercises versus glute focused exercises. Nothing wrong with a quad focused split squat or anything like that. It just depends on what you're trying to work. And so just kind of understanding like there's different setups.
To bias quads over glutes, because you'll still get you'll still get glutes.
Yes.
But it's just if you really want to make them kind of like the main event of that exercise, you can set up to bias a little bit more of the glutes in like a split squat or even a leg press, just depending on where you put your feet, more quad bias or more glute focus too.
Yeah. And I think that's an important thing to understand for somebody that's new to lifting, new to understanding setups, that you can position your body, your legs in different ways to, when we talk about bias, it's, you know, being able to get more of a different muscle than another. So if the, like you said, if the goal is glutes, then you want to understand how to set up appropriately to really make sure you're getting the glutes. Can you work a muscle in total isolation? No. Even in a leg press, which is like probably the easiest to set up and the easiest to get that glute focus, you are still getting some quad in there, right? Like it's not just the glutes doing the work. But it's good to understand like how to set that up. And a good program is going to describe that for you, probably show you a visual of how to do that. You should have a coach, if you have one, that should be able to tell you how to appropriately set up that exercise. And if they don't understand different muscle biases, then you may need to find a new coach. That's something that they should understand. That's what you're paying them for. So that would probably be for, are there any other glute exercises that kind of focus more on the stretched or lengthened position of the muscle that you would, that are some of your favorites, Val?
In my toolbox of glute exercises, those are the ones that I tend to use the most because it's easy for clients to set up and you can create more stability. Like leg press, if you have it, whether or not you train at home, there's so many clients with home gyms that have leg press machines now, which is incredible. But for people who train at home, doing a split squat is going to give you great stability. The benefit of a split squat versus a squat, if those are your only options for like lengthened bias glute work, is that it's unilateral and you are able to create more stability because contrary to popular belief on, you know, you can actually hold on to something when you're doing a split squat. You don't have to balance unless you want to, you can absolutely do it. But if you are trying to get the most time under tension for your glutes, you can hold on to something for stability with the split squat. So you can really milk that eccentric. And it's a lot harder to do that if you're squatting. So that's like more my go-to for clients at home who don't have access to a leg press is to do more of that unilateral work. The downside of it is it takes longer. It just does.
Yeah. Unilateral work is kind of a pain in the butt sometimes, but there is a lot of benefit to that, especially if you are, like you said, working out from home, you have less load, then that unilateral work is going to really come in clutch. And real big shout out to holding on to something when you're doing a split squat, because you, right? When Val's talking about that eccentric, that's that low, you know, in a split squat, that's the lowering portion of the movement when those glutes are stretching, and you can feel the difference for, you know, maybe if you're feeling unstable and you're holding two dumbbells and you kind of just drop down into that split squat. There's not going to be as much tension if you're not controlling the eccentric, but you hold on to something and you pick a nice heavy weight to hold in the other hand and you really slow down the eccentric or maybe even pause at the bottom for a count. Oh my goodness, you're going to feel that tension in the glute versus just kind of getting through it. You know, we had Chris Barakat on a couple of episodes again, and we talked about having your mind in the muscle, right?
Yes, I was thinking the same thing. I'm like, Chris.
Yeah. And so, and he even talked about unilateral work. He talked about pausing in those eccentrics and those lengthened positions. And, you know, really to get hypertrophy in any muscle, to improve in any movement, those are some great tools to do that. And, you know, as much as it would be great to have a leg press at home, if you don't have availability to that, there's so many great options of really solid exercises that you can do, but you just need to do them well. You need to practice them and do them well. And don't get distracted by all the sparkly, crazy stuff online. Just like really stick to some of that core foundational stuff. And then if you want to add some other things or experiment with some other things, then great. But like really go to some of that, those core movements first, and really make sure you're understanding how to work those glutes and appropriately before you start, you know, adding some sprinkles in.
Yes. So we're hitting on like more lengthened focused glute max exercises and the import, like how you can execute them and do them well and, you know, really take them to failure or close to failure. And it's important to spend a little bit more time or a little bit more volume in those lengthened portions of the range for hypertrophy, because that's mm-hmm. where you get a lot of those mechanical tension adaptations. However, there's short portion of the range too, and we do want to train a muscle through its full range of motion. And so in the case of the glute max, if you're trying to train the glute through its full range of motion, you're going to hit more of that lengthened portion with things like the leg press and the split squat. But if we move more into the short portion of the range, that's going to be exercises like the glute bridge and like kickbacks, 45 hip extension, where you're really focused on that top half and overloading that hip extension portion with the glutes. And
when Val's talking about the short position, that's at the place where that muscle is most contracted. Right? So when we're talking about like lengthened positions, you think about the glute. I'm using my hands. You can't see me, but you're thinking about the glute stretching, right? And you can feel that stretch in the bottom of a squat or a split squat. But then when you're going into hip extension, like maybe with a glute bridge, you can feel then that glute max really contracting. So it's just like that opposite range of motion, right? The hip flexion versus the hip extension to really fully contract that glute. And so when we're talking about working within a full range of motion, I mean, there is value in working at lengthened positions, mostly for hypertrophy, but then also still getting in some of that contracted or short positioned work as well.
Yes. And doing it well, really getting hip extension. What I find, and I know Heather, you see this too, with your clients, is when people are doing glute bridges, they tend to load it up so heavy, they actually don't get full hip extension. And now some of you guys might be listening and rolling your eyes like, oh my gosh, does it really matter? Well, if your goal is to get hip extension, why would you lift so heavy that you can't get that portion of the range in which you want to emphasize in the movement? Yeah. And another thing to take into account with stuff is loading. We kind of feel like our ego is taking a hit if we have to reduce the load. But I can tell you that You're going to do way more for the gains if you reduce the load and improve your form than if you keep trying to add more load at the expense of reducing range of motion and possibly just taking tension into other muscles as, you know, as a result, right? See that a lot.
And a way to get good at some of this short biased work is spending some longer pauses, you know, in the contracted position, right? So if you've ever done a 2-count pause at the top of a glute bridge, you'll know it's you will
most people's 2-count pauses is half a second. I'm not gonna lie, it's not two.
I was actually talking to one of my clients, and it was a client in my group membership program, and I had programmed 2-count pauses in the contracted position of the glute bridge. And I said, you know, I admitted to her, I said, you know, I actually put a 2-count pause knowing that most people would only spend a 1-count pause there, because when I put a 1-count pause there, they just take a breath there. Yeah. And she goes, so the rule followers are being punished? And I said, no, well, yes, but but you're just getting more gains. It's fine. You know, like you're just getting to spend more time and under tension in that top portion. So yeah, so most people's 2-count pause is like kind of a 1-count pause, but really like try it sometime. Like pick a load that you can get full hip extension. That's when your glutes are fully contracted, and then spend 2 counts there and tell me that lighter load is easier. Right? Like when you really are getting a full contraction, it creates so much tension. And when you start to really learn what tension in the muscle that you're trying to work it feels like, I mean, you really will probably start having to regress some of the weight a little bit because you'll realize, oh, I'm leaving a lot of gains here on the table. I'm not actually really getting into a full range of motion. I'm not really getting a good contraction or a fully lengthened movement, because people actually short out lengthened positions as well, right? Yep. Like your body kind of knows. Your body's such a cheater. You know, like naturally our body doesn't want to go into these positions because they're like, oh, no, this actually does not feel great. And so we'll naturally sort of short that out either in the contracted or the lengthened portion. And once you learn how to really go fully into a lengthened position or fully into a contracted position, you will find you have to reduce weight to get that. And then you can start to build that weight back up. I mean, we were just talking about your glute max press back, Val, and I keep seeing you pressing back. It used to be like whole stack, and then it was like whole stack plus a little. And now you're like, I don't know, you're combining 2 stacks or something. I'm not sure. it's gotten out of hand, I have to say.
I have to toot my own horn. I am so excited because this week I was able to, so I have a gym pin, which you guys need to check out gym pins. Shout out to Ben from Gym Pin. He has this really cool invention where it's like, it's a pin. I'm really bad at describing things, but go and look. And it goes into a weight stack so that you can add more plates once you have topped out a weight stack. And so.
Right. Because normally people, you can add, I think most people know the hack of like, you can pin in like a little small plate into the stack. But once you start getting these bigger plates, you actually need a pin that's big enough to support a bigger plate that you can pin onto the stack.
Yes, and more of them. And I happen to have the shorter one, so mine can fit. I can slide on to my little pin 2 45-pound plates. Wow. But you can buy ones that are like twice as long, or I don't know, they're really long, so that you can add more plates to it. I genuinely didn't think that I needed a longer one. And now I'm kind of wishing that I did, because this week I put 2 45-pound plates on there and I pressed back, I think it was 10 or 11 reps on both legs. You guys, I was so excited and nobody around me knew what was happening. And I just, just was taking pictures and putting it on my stories because I was so excited on Instagram. So anyway.
Well, it's impressive. And you're a little person that has a lot of strength. I've always just been impressed with how strong you are. So you do not have show muscles. You have like real legitimate working functional muscles.
I wish if I'm like for all the heavy weight that I like to lift, for me, like this is just relative to me. I don't want anybody to compare to what I do, but just like me, right? I'm like, I really wish that I had bigger glutes. Like, I work really hard. Why aren't they bigger?
Well, I think they're lovely glutes, Val.
But talking about that, because before we started this recording this episode, that was something we were talking about. But a lot of people will reach out and they're like, how do you do that? Like, that's, you know, that looks really challenging. And it's one of those exercises that has been a staple in my glute repertoire. I don't even know if that's how you say that.
I think you said it right.
for the last like three years or so. And I've just worked on it in different ranges, in, you know, deloads, and like different rep ranges and different rest intervals and pauses, you know, lowering the cable, doing more of a kickback versus a press back. And so it's just a staple for me that for me personally, I feel it has really helped to improve the shape of my glutes over the last few years. So,
right. And I think that kind of goes back to the value of not needing so many different glute exercises in your tool bag. Like, pick ones that you see value in and work on it and get really good at it. You know, I remember, I think it was about the time that we got to know each other and started working together, like this exercise, this particular setup came out. And so I think we've both done a lot of practice in this exercise. And I look at old videos and you could just tell, like, I was unfamiliar with it at first. My setup has improved over time. Like, and as my setup improved and my coordination improved, then I was able to add more load to it and get stronger in the movement. And it's one of my favorites. And I do it all the time. Like, really, yes. It comes down to this idea of boring basics, like just really getting good at stuff. And I think one of the problems with all the clickbait on social media is it's people, you know, I think I love the creativity out there and there's nothing wrong with that. And sometimes you do have to get kind of creative with different setups, maybe when you're working out from home or a different gym and whatever that is. But for the most part, it's just getting really good at some good basic exercises and learning how to create that tension in the muscle. And clearly you've gotten really good at the glute max kickback and to the point where you're having to add, like, you know, a whole nother weight stack on basically. So it's just, yeah, it's very exciting and it's very rewarding, but it does take some patience and focus.
And yeah. And I like how you were hitting on this consistency with doing the, like, kind of like the boring basics that are going to help. And in, you know, in the context of this episode, we're talking about glute exercises. So with that, when you're looking at what exercises people do on Instagram and they're like, hey, save this workout for later and try this out, you'll see that a lot of the exercises they do are repetitive. Mm-hmm. And when I say repetitive, sure, they're doing a lunge and they're doing a leg press and they're doing walking lunges and they're doing a split squat. And then they're doing like some hip thrusts. But if you go back and look at those five exercises I just named, like, how many are training the glutes in their lengthened position? So I just named five. Four of them are lengthened biased exercises and one is shortened biased. Do you really need to do four exercises that are essentially hitting the glute max in the same portion of the range? Or could you just do one and do it really, really good and maybe do, like, I don't know, another set if you wanted to, if you wanted more volume, if it's a specialization program or something, and improve there, then move to a different portion of the range. And that, you know, and that kind of gets into programming, but I think that that's something that a lot of people need to consider is junk volume to a certain extent. Like, Sure, you're still going to get stimulus, right? But
no, and I think a lot of people hear the term junk volume and they don't quite understand what that means. But that's a great example of junk volume. You know, that if you understand that you need a lengthened biased exercise and maybe a little more volume in the lengthened if you're trying to grow your glutes, and you also a short biased exercise, so like a glute bridge. If you understood that, you wouldn't have to do those four other exercises. You could be a lot more efficient in the gym. Like, you know, you get in there and you do a leg press and a glute bridge, man, you can get in there and work really, really hard versus doing all those four exercises you mentioned. And after a while, I mean, geez, if I had to do all that in one training session, I wouldn't be getting a lot of output out of my muscles by that fourth exercise, you know, yeah. Like it just, mm-hmm. it's like diminishing returns. And so instead, pick some really good exercises, get really good at them and work really hard in them. And you're having to, you get a lot more for less. And so watch out for that too. When someone's like, here's my workout, and they have like the five different, you know, exercises that are essentially doing the same thing, you don't need to do that. You know, those are all great exercises, but they don't all have to be thrown in the same day, you know, because after a while, it's just, you're just kind of spinning your wheels.
Yeah. And it builds up, yeah, a lot of fatigue in some cases and maybe pushes you in the wrong direction of, mm-hmm. of what you're trying to accomplish with, you know, building muscle. We have hit on some exercises focused on more of the glute max. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about a couple other exercises that we use for the other glute complex muscles. So in the glute complex, we have the glute maximus. And you can definitely do different things if you want to get all nuancy and to bias like the upper division of the glute max, you know, the lower division, things like that. But we're not going to get into those details. So we talked about the glute max, and then we have the glute medius and then the glute minimus. And so doing glute medius, it's more of that upper outer glute area for training that. And what I feel like there's just like one exercise that really works for that. But like, what do you think, Heather?
Oh, well, let's see. No, I mean, clearly the glute med swipe is a staple, you know, in the exercise. And actually with a lot of my clients, I talk about when we get into those different divisions, I talk about creating the 3D booty, you know, because you do yes. want, you do want some nice shape. That's how we get the shape. You can't see my hands, but I'm creating some great glute shape with my hands. So, you know, like the glute max is that biggest portion. Then the glute med, you're kind of coming up and around the side, and glute minimus is just lateral. But so going back to your question, like the glute med swipe, it is the goat for working the glute medius, right? It yeah. also is just great to work different divisions, not only for just that overall aesthetic look, but just for functionality. Excuse me. For functionality, it's great for hip health and, you know, that hip stability and all of that. So, but yes, glute med swipe. And you do a great, I love, Val does a great glute med swipe as well. And there's lots of different ways that you can set it. I mean, there's not really that many ways you can set it up, but there's different machines you can set it up on. And it's just yeah. understanding that leg path and understanding those principles. And then you can set it up in a lot of different ways. Like we've done it on the multi-hip machine. You can do it on a cable machine. Val's always got her Gandalf staff of stability. because it's a movement that is, once you got it, once you have it locked in, it's not necessarily hard to perform, but sometimes stability can be an issue. And we're always talking about stability, because you have better stability, then you can get some better output and tension in that muscle. So anything else you would add on that, Val?
Yeah. So I love everything that you had to say with glute medius swipes or the swipies. And I was just real quick, the reason why I started using the word swipe, and then I just say swipey because I'm just a mom and always have to do weird things like that. But swipe versus kickback is I wanted people to get that like swipe motion versus kicking. Like I want
Because you're not really kicking. You're not really kicking. And that's another thing with that movement. And you can go to Val's story. She's got tons of glute med swipies in her stories, but more than I do. But I love it. I just am bad at posting and Val's good at posting. but you are swiping. You're keeping your leg actually fairly rigid. That's something I see a lot of people kind of like bent over and their knees all bent when they're doing it. And you actually keep your leg fairly straight and you're really just kind of, again, swiping over and out to the side a bit.
Yes.
I remember Cass calling it open for business, close for business.
Cassim Hansen.
I know, naughty. But like, you know, you just kind of cross your legs in the front of you and then you're kind of going, following that leg path and going out and back slightly. So,
yes. So the good old swipe. And then with the glute med swipe and even going back to the glute max press back, because both of those exercises are unilateral work and you do have instability at the hip, you know, like the non-working leg is isolating and stabilizing the movement. Failure and fatigue is going to be different than if you were, you know, doing a leg press, like just going back to leg press, for example. And so that's was something that I always, a few years ago, I would always like kind of get annoyed with of like, oh my goodness, my stabilizing leg is getting, you know, quite sore. What in the world can I do? And that's where the idea of holding on to a stick or holding on to the pole with both hands came into play with brainstorming and stuff so that you can do what you can to create as much stability, all the while realizing you can't have all the stability with that exercise because it's a unilateral movement. So you are going to get fatigue in your non-working leg when you're doing that. And you can do things to, you know, extend the sets if you need to, rest pauses and things to take those exercises more into failure if you want.
Sure. And also that non-working leg, the leg that's stabilizing, a lot of people do complain that they get fatigue in that leg. But honestly, the more that you do the movement as well, you become less fatigued in that leg. Has that been your experience? Mm-hmm. Like I don't feel as much fatigue in my supporting leg as I used to, just because of the practice and I've gotten stronger in it and, you know, and understanding how to set it up. So there's always that as well. Like the more you practice, the better you get at it. And you're still going to have some fatigue, but it's not probably going to be as bad as it was when you first started. So
yeah, exactly. You get that, those like neurological, that like improvement of the motor pattern that comes with continued practice of it.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's the glute med. And then glute minimus is just straight abduction work, which is really, you know, quite simple to do. You can even use the mini band. This is a great time to use a mini band and use, put it around your legs and straight to the side.
Yeah, that is, I mean, my work at home clients, they do, that's when we like pop out the mini bands, right? Like that's a great place to use your mini band. We always joke about like throwing mini bands on and blah, blah. There is actually a really great benefits to mini band work if you're using them well, you know, I mean, if for a purpose that they're intended for. So abduction, for those aren't familiar with that, that is just when you're bringing, you know, your leg as a weight coming away from your body, like laterally. Adduction, the way you can think about that is they're coming together, like your legs are adding and abduction is going away. So yeah, and you just working kind of that side portion of the glutes.
And I'm gonna throw this out there because I'm guaranteeing that there's people thinking they haven't brought up the seated abduction machine and the seated adduction machine. You can do that. Like
totally.
I know that there's been a lot of talk in the past on social media of like, you know, if you do that too much, it overworks the piriformis or it's more piriformis bias. You know what? If like, do it. Just in all things, watch your volume. Is that something you really need to do a whole lot of volume for? Like, are you trying to, you know, hypertrophy those little piriformis muscles and stuff? probably yeah, and not. But
that's why I usually put those exercises at the end of a workout, because they tend to be more functional exercises. And we want to have strength in those movements. We want to improve our hip health, and you don't have to go ham on them. You know, go ham on the leg press, go ham on the glute max kickback or the glute med, but glute minimus, you know, you don't need to be a hero. It's just like some good functional work in the glute minimus. And I really do like the abduction and adduction machine. I think they're great. They're stable. They're easy to get into and set up. There's value in that. Nothing wrong with it at all. So,
yeah. So do it if you want to, and you don't need to feel bad. Sure, maybe people will judge you if you post it on Instagram, but who cares?
Who cares? They can go eat rocks. So one other thing I wanted to touch on, Val, real quick, and this is maybe we should have touched on this earlier, but we talk a lot about the leg press, and we kind of talked about this before the episode started, but What do you think about, you know, people that want to do like deadlifts and they want to do squats like with a barbell? I mean, what place do those types of exercises have in best glute exercises?
Yeah, and even RDLs or bent knee RDLs. That's another one.
Bent knee RDLs. There's so many great variations.
Yeah. I think all of those have their place, and it comes down to you're looking at exercise selection, what it is your goals are, whether it's even looking at shorter term goals versus long term goals. And if you want to do things for functionality or for possibly getting more overall systemic benefits, those exercises like the deadlifts and the RDLs are absolutely fantastic. You're still going to be able to take sets to a high degree of fatigue. You're going to be training more muscles. You know, when you're holding onto a barbell or dumbbells doing a deadlift or RDL, you are going to be, you know, your traps and upper back are going to be stabilizing. You've got core work going on. There's a lot more happening there. And it's not that it's better or worse than a leg press. Is that the right tool given the context of your goals?
Yeah. And I've been looking at a lot of these different exercises. You know, if our main goal is like, we just want to build those glutes, you are going to want to find an exercise that you can get really stable in, get a lot of load on those glutes. But if we're wanting, you know, maybe we just like to squat with a barbell, maybe we want to get really good at a deadlift, and all those points you touched on, there is a lot of functionality in those movements. When we talk about that, like you think about your everyday functions of like squatting down to pick up your kids or your grandkids, or, you know, having to coordinate different muscle groups and the systemic benefits. When we talk about systemic, it's kind of that full body, like,
conditioning.
Fatigue. Yeah. Conditioning. Right. So like when I do a squat, I cannot squat as much as I can leg press, but my heart rate cranks way up there because I'm having to do like incorporate so many more muscles and coordinate it more. And so I feel more systemic fatigue when I do a squat. That's not a bad thing. It just depends on what my goal is. If I have a client that just really wants to get in there and work glutes, leg press. But if maybe they don't have that equipment, or maybe they just want to get really good at squatting, or they're really concerned about like wanting to improve just overall function in their life, functionality, then like, let's do it. Let's do a squat. Let's do a glute an RDL or a deadlift, you know? So there's nothing wrong with those. And I think that's the thing that I struggle with social media, is it's very polarizing. Right? Like everybody wants to say what is good and what is bad. And I don't think anything in life is really 100% good or bad. It just depends on who the person is and what their goal is and what they deem to be valuable in their program or their life or whatever it is.
Yes. Because you have a client right now who that's what she wants to do. She really wants to improve her deadlifts, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, let's do it.
She's had a performance goal, and she said it. And I remember her asking me, she goes, is this a bad goal? And I said, it is a good goal because that's what you want to do. Like, I think it's great. She's in a place where she's very coordinated. She works really hard. She's really consistent. She understands all the boring basics. And now she said she wanted a little spark. She just wanted to do something a little fun, a little different. And I was like, okay, let's talk about it. Let's do it. And she's excited, you know?
Yes.
So it's, I think that's good enough reason to do an exercise. If it sparks interest and excitement in you and you just, you want to, that's good enough reason.
It really is. Because while the topic of this is best glute building exercises, not everybody out there is trying to build their glutes. And even as lifestyle clients, like, sure, you want to improve your physique. Like, that's what we're all trying to do is improve our physique, add more muscle so we can have more tone. But we don't have to do it in the most optimized way. We can, like, we figure out what works the best for us and then train according to that so that we're still living true to our values and we're not just doing this workout because we're like, okay, well, this is the most optimal way. You know, this is, you know, this is what Val and Heather said. If I'm trying to really build my glutes, this is the most optimal way, but I hate it. Well, if you hate it, why are you doing it? You know, there's lots of ways to get to your goal and there's no deadline when it comes to building muscle. This is we get to do for life.
It's so true. And you can take all of these principles and apply them to any other muscle group, really. But like the bottom line is when you are navigating the wild world of social media or anything else is learning. If you can learn the principles, then you can learn to govern yourself. You can learn to make the choices that are best for you instead of letting other people think for you all the time. And that's the biggest takeaway is like what I hope you learned from this episode is some good core principles so that you can make choices for you to decide what the best glute exercise is.
Yes, because I know we didn't touch on like bent knee RDL. Like there's other exercises that are out there. So some of you might be going like, why didn't you talk about this one or this one? It's like there are lots of great exercises. If there is something that you love, that you perform well, that you can take to failure and you're seeing progress with, keep doing it.
Sure.
We just want you to become a more like a more informed consumer. Right.
Yeah. Well said.
So. Thank you. Is there anything else that we need to hit on? This was solid.
Yeah, I loved it. This was a great discussion. So thanks, Val. Thank you for bringing this topic to the table. I love it. Yeah,
this was fun. You know me. I can talk about glutes any day of the week.
Well, you do have beautiful glutes. Thanks for sharing.
By the way.
Oh, thank you. All right. Well, thank you so much. That's all for this episode of Training Age. If you'd like to learn more about the podcast, find us at trainingage.com or on Instagram at Training Age. If you're interested in working with either Val or myself, you can find links to our coaching services there as well.
Thanks for listening.